This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And good afternoon, good evening, depending on what part of the country you live in and are listening to the show. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. Again, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Some housekeeping, and then I'll give you a rundown on the show for the rest of the hour. Don't forget that the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. If you want to follow Tony Perkins on Twitter, that's T. Perkins. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, that's Dr. Everett Piper. That's D-R-E-V-E-R-E-T-T-P-I-P-E-R. Again, this is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, brought to you by the Family Research Council. Starting out at the top of the hour today, we will bring in I've got professor from Indiana University School of Law, Bill Hodes, will join us. He was a professor at the Indiana School of Law, and he actually was a professor, a teacher, of Vice President Mike Pence. At the quarter of the hour, we will bring in Casey Maddox from the Alliance Defending Freedom, and she will be discussing with you and with us and with me, the Catholic University, who will be punishing a student group for being Catholic. A Catholic university who is now punishing a student group for being Catholic. And actually, Casey is a male, not a female. Then, at the bottom of the hour, we will bring in Tim Graham. Tim is with the Media Research Center, and Tim will discuss with us the Russian investigation and the liberal bias in the way it's reporting that. So again, back at the top of the hour, leading in this particular program, we will be discussing Paul Manafort, the former campaign manager for President Donald Trump, and his business associate, Rick Gates, surrendered to federal authorities this morning. A host of various different accusations are fielded against them. They are being indicted for charges of money laundering, tax fraud, and conspiracy against the United States government. Bill Hodes is a former professor, as I've said, at Indiana University School of Law in Indianapolis, Indiana, where he taught Vice President Mike Pence, among many other students, over the years. He's an author. He's obviously a legal scholar. Welcome to Washington Watch, Professor Hodes. We're delighted to have you this evening.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
Well, what I'm going to do right now is starting this particular segment is I'm going to play an audio of Sarah Sanders, where she starts out by saying today's announcement has nothing to do with the president. Let's cue up that audio.
There's no intention or plan to make any changes in regards to special counsel. But look, today's announcement has nothing to do with the president, has nothing to do with the president's campaign or campaign activity. The real collusion scandal, as we've said several times before, has everything to do with the Clinton campaign, Fusion GPS, and Russia. There's clear evidence of the Clinton campaign colluding with Russian intelligence to spread disinformation and smear the president to influence the election. We've been saying from day one there's been no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, and nothing in the indictment today changes that at all.
But the George Papadopoulos agreement is about the campaign. It is specifically about the campaign.
It has nothing to do with the activities of the campaign. It has to do with his failure to tell the truth. That doesn't have anything to do with the campaign or the campaign's activities.
All right, Professor. I'm going to let you run with this, but let me just give a very quick overview. We have a 12-count indictment. It has been issued from the Justice Department Special Counsel Robert Mueller into the alleged Russian meddling in last year's campaign. The indictment contains counts of conspiracy against the United States, conspiracy to launder money, acting as an unregistered agent of the Ukrainian government, false and misleading statements, and failure to file reports of foreign bank and financial accounts. The list goes on and on with regard to the various and sundry different violations in this indictment. But let's go back to the claim by Sarah Sanders that this has nothing to do with the president. Do you agree?
Oh, I think that's quite right from what we see on the on the face of it. I guess like everybody else, I've been scrambling to watch headlines on my computer and see what's what. But my understanding is that these charges, although they grew out of the investigation that was started because of the appointment of Robert Mueller as the special prosecutor, involving that whole constellation of issues. One of the people that he certainly was legitimate to want to talk to is somebody who was indeed the campaign manager for, I guess, a couple of months. But once you start investigating, you find, you know, you go down whichever way the leads run. And I think there was some understanding way back when Manafort first came on the scene into the Trump campaign that there were lingering questions about exactly what was he doing in the Ukraine, whose side was he on, what about the fees that he earned as a political consultant, sort of an American-style political consultant going over. He lived in Ukraine for a long, long time. And I believe these charges today are really left over that could have been the same charges had he never, ever been connected to the campaign. I don't think that's controversial or remarkable in any way. We all, you know, because we're all news junkies and we knew something was coming down today, we all ask, what are the ramifications? What about Trump? What about Clinton? But in fact, it's way, way too early to get any sense of whether there's going to be another shoe or another two shoes or another three shoes dropped. It's just what little I've been able to glean, a fairly big deal, yes, but fairly common failure to register as a foreign agent, bringing Ukrainian money into the U.S., you know, without properly.
Does this tell you anything about the Mueller probe? Does it tell you anything about the Mueller probe at this point, or is it too early to make comment on that?
I would say it indeed is too early. Many people predicted, and I think correctly, that one of the arguments against having a special prosecutor is that they really don't have much of a limited mandate. They have to start at the, you know, sort of the, you start at wherever you are on the chess pieces on the board, and then you go where it follows. I don't think, it doesn't sound like this has been way far afield, but whether it comes back to something more Trump-related, we don't know yet. Whether, as some people have surmised, that this is designed to put pressure on Manafort. You know, he may have independently committed certain crimes, but maybe they would offer him a deal if he would.
But that's all speculation at this point.
That's all speculation. It's way, way too early. Even in the Manafort case, it's too early, let alone trying to read any significant tea leaves.
So you don't read anything into this in particular other than the facts that were disclosed today, and he's been indicted on several charges, and the facts are the facts, and it doesn't really correlate with President Trump or anything else for that matter. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I think that's right, but I wouldn't go too far in that direction, because this was not just any old prosecutor and any old defendant. This was not a one-time drug deal in, you know, Phoenix, Arizona. This was at the center. This was Mueller. This was the guy who had been Trump's campaign manager. So I guess I would split the...
It is significant.
I would split the baby by saying it... my first comment, I think, is still correct. It tells us nothing about Trump, but yet it would be wrong to not be speculating at least a little bit.
Sure,
just that
sure.
We shouldn't get carried away with our speculations, I guess.
Let's talk about Mueller for a second. There are many, especially conservatives, who are saying he's facing questions over his role in the FBI director, as the FBI director during the Obama Russian uranium deal. Do you think that that's relevant to this discussion? Should we be asking questions of Mueller himself?
I think it's a separate question. I think it's a legitimate question, but I also think that it's a little bit too early to know about that as well, because from what I've read, and again, we're all scrambling as each of these, you know, there's news on two or three or four different fronts. There is a story, a narrative from mostly conservative commentators that makes a lot of sense, that says, well, wait a minute, Hillary Clinton did this and she was Secretary of State. But there's also another counter to that, which is coming from some conservative sources as well. It says, well, wait a second. Hillary Clinton was one of 15 people who had to sign off on that. The first time that Bill Clinton or the Clinton Foundation got funds was before Trump had run, before she was Secretary of State, before Trump had even announced his campaign, let alone she had announced her campaign formally. So that it's just there's just not enough there either. There might be, but I would say it should be, again, separated out, just like today's indictments are separate from the Russia, the Trump-Russia thing. They're also separate from if there is going to be any, it's actually not Clinton so much as the Democratic Party establishment and Podesta. Those are all, I think, legitimate but very, very early questions that we need to just take a step back, think about them, but not jump to any conclusions.
Manafort, the bond has been set for Manafort at $12 million and for Gates at $10 million. This seems very excessive, at least in my mind it does. Is it excessive, and does that mean anything?
I don't. I'm on that one, I have to confess that I'm the wrong person to ask. I don't, you know, have a good sense of that. Now, no, I do believe that they're, if they're not wearing electronic bracelets, I think that I saw just as I was coming on the phone that they have agreed to, in effect, house arrest, or, you know, and they've probably given up their passports, which is, I think, common in white collar type crimes.
So that is, that's not unusual to, quote unquote, place yourself under house arrest with an excessive or a high bond such as this.
Yeah, I think that's right. Now, whether it's high, I mean, these are serious crimes. I would say, especially in Manafort's case, you could. I mean, the main reason you set a bond high or low is there a flight risk? Some would say the risk is very small because he's a player in Washington and wants to stand and clear his name. On the other hand, the things he's charged with are dealing with things going on in Ukraine. So if he got cold feet, you know, the question of would he just run back to his, the people that he was working for in Ukraine and just retire right now in Ukraine is also a legitimate question. So I would say probably some, it sounds a little high, but probably not way high, because I think the flight risk is not a zero factor here.
Professor, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon on Washington Watch. Coming up next, a Catholic university may remove the official status of a group on campus that acknowledges a traditional Catholic view of marriage between one man and one woman. We'll talk with Casey Maddox of the Alliance Defending Freedom right after this break.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers. In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. A candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. And no, I'm not Tony Perkins. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony this afternoon. Again, follow Tony on Twitter. It's T. Perkins. And follow me on Twitter. It's Dr. Everett Piper. That's D-R-E-V-E-R-E-T-T-P-I-P-E-R. And again, at the last quarter of the hour, as we turn to head toward the top of the hour, and again, at the quarter of hour, 15 minutes left in the program, I will be taking phone calls and doing some Q&A. And the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Well, Georgetown University is the oldest Catholic and Jesuit institution of higher learning in the United States. The oldest Catholic and Jesuit institution of higher learning in the United States. Again, I'll say it one more time. The oldest Catholic university, the oldest Catholic university, college or university in the United States, and they have chosen to derecognize a student organization by the name of Love Saxa, because this student organization on Georgetown's campus holds to a traditional Catholic view of marriage. So in other words, a Catholic university is punishing a student group for being Catholic. Casey Maddox, director of the Center for Academic Freedom, for the Alliance Defending Freedom, joins us right now to share more of the details of this case. Casey, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. Thanks for having me on, Dr. Piper.
Again, I butchered it earlier, Casey. I said Casey was, I would be having a female join us rather than a male, and I apologize for that. But in our gender
The problem of having a name like Casey is I'm misgendered frequently, but I have no problem with that. It's perfectly acceptable. Thank you.
And today, unfortunately, the very language or the very nomenclature and labels and vocabulary that includes misgendered actually makes sense to us. So I'm sorry for that, Casey. Forgive me. All right. So here's the case. Love Saxa is a group that advocates for marriage between a man and a woman. It's under fire from an LGBT group on the campus there at Georgetown called Pride and Queer People of Color. According to the Georgetown newspaper, this student organization is challenging the right of Love Saxa to even exist on a Catholic university. In other words, it's another example of those people on the left, the progressives, saying they can't tolerate the intolerance of those people that they can't tolerate, and that they hate those hateful people. They're sure that nothing is sure. They know that nothing can be known. They're absolutely confident. There are no absolutes. Again, the left saws off the very branch upon which it sits. This is incredible. A Catholic university is going to punish an organization that holds to the official teachings of the Catholic Church?
It is really pretty shocking. And, you know, normally the cases that we get involved in, we've had a dozen different cases in the last year against public universities that violate students' First Amendment rights. Normally, those are the cases we're engaged in, the ones to which the Constitution applies. Georgetown, of course, as a private school, is not bound by the U.S. Constitution here. What it is bound by is its responsibility as an academic institution, and particularly as a Catholic institution, one would think that the last thing that they would want to do is exclude a student group for being Catholic. Tonight is actually the vote that will be held to determine whether or not Love Saxa is going to be excluded from Georgetown for the crime of being Catholic.
Who is voting on this?
This is the Student Activity Committee that will make the determination whether or not they can continue as a student organization. And it's basically under rules that the university has created and provided this power to these the student government to make the determination whether student groups can be formed or not. But it's expressly because, not because even of an event that they've done or speakers that they brought in or anything of that sort, it's simply the fact that in the group's constitution, they talk about the fact that they are in favor of the Catholic view of marriage and sexuality.
How in the world can the administration of Georgetown approach this situation with a straight face? They're Catholic, my land. How can they punish students for behaving like Catholics and believing in the Catholic Church and its doctrine and its discipline? It makes no sense.
It really doesn't. But, you know, this is exactly the kind of situation, I think, that plays out on public university campuses all the time. It's just a little slightly more hidden when it's happening on a public university campus. So you'll have student government or the university administrators that make the decision about a group like we had at Queens College in New York City, for example. They just decided to deny them recognition and give them no reason why, gave them no answer for why they were doing it. Well, it was because of the fact that this was a pro-life student group. That's why they were being excluded from the campus, but they can't say that out loud because of the First Amendment. And we've seen numerous other situations like that. At a school like Georgetown, they can be a lot more open and honest, frankly, about why this group is unacceptable on modern university campus.
Will they be open and honest about it, or will they obfuscate and just try to dodge the issue?
Well, the express complaint against the group is that is basically just the fact that the group has Catholic views with respect to marriage. And so the group, the folks that are complaining that the university is allowing this complaint to go forward as if this is a legitimate basis for excluding a group from Georgetown, the reason being brought forward is that this is a group that espouses these religious ideas about marriage and sexuality that are unacceptable at a place like Georgetown.
And what I'm reading right now in front of me is that this group, the liberal group that's protesting or filing charges against Love Saxa, says that this conservative group's definition of marriage excludes and dehumanizes individuals in the LGBTQ community. Excludes and dehumanizes. Well, my question would be, does it exclude and dehumanize someone to suggest that their definition, for example, of human relationships, sexual relationships, if it includes the legal codification of incest as being acceptable, did I just exclude and dehumanize those within the incestuous community from a Catholic university? I mean, the slippery slope here just keeps going and going and going. What's the next aberrant behavior we're going to be talking about that's going to be legitimized within culture and even within a Catholic college?
Well, and the bottom line here is if you disagree, you can disagree strongly with this group's views on marriage. Frankly, even at a place like Georgetown, I suspect that they are in the minority view at a place like Georgetown. That's fine. What you have to accept is that people who have different views are also good people who have different views. And just debate those ideas. Don't exclude them from the campus.
Casey, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate what Alliance Defending Freedom does. You've helped Oklahoma Wesleyan University, the Little Sisters of the Poor, and thousands of other organizations defend their religious freedom. Coming up next, confused about what to believe regarding the Russian scandal, Tim Graham with Media Research Center will join us and help us make sense out of this. We'll be right back.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
And welcome back to Washington Watch, brought to you by the Family Research Council. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. Again, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. If you're interested in my book, Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth, I'll say that again, Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth, go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or other bookstores and you can pick it up there. So just Google Not a Daycare. Everett Piper, and you'll find that there. All right. We have talked about earlier this issue of former campaign manager, Donald Trump campaign manager, Paul Manafort, and his longtime business associate, Rick Gates, being indicted by the federal grand jury on 12 charges. But what I want to talk about now is the drastic difference in the way the news is covering this particular side of the story versus the fact that we're discovering things with regard to the Democratic National Committee, the Democratic Party, and Hillary Clinton's campaign. With us right now is Tim Graham, Director of Media Analysis with the Media Research Center. Tim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. What I'm going to do, Tim, is set you up here with an audio clip. Basically, I'm going to play this clip, which shows how Fox and Friends co-host Brian Kilmeade walked into the lion's den today during his book tour on Sunday when he appeared on ABC's This Week as part of a panel that apparently was stacked against him on this issue when he tried to comment. And this is a montage with another clip from The View, which shuts down Meghan McCain after she brings up the Clinton-funded dossier as part of this particular story. So let's cue up this audio, listen to it for about a minute and a half, and then I'm going to have you comment.
We need to give out the David Copperfield or Harry Houdini Award for misdirection in this thing. This reminds me of the uranium deal, whole story, which has been debunked along the way, all along the way. This is a whole nother story. There is no similarity between what Robert Mueller's investigation and collusion and what the Russians wanted to do and a dossier paid for in part by the Democrats in order of
that. Why would you think that?
The FBI indictments could have been handed out.
There's no relationship between the dossier and the Democrats.
some people were saying, oh, the obsession with this Russia, it's just crazy. Yeah. And I just feel a little better because I was beginning to think, is it all in my head? Are these all coincidences?
This is the indictment, by the way, everyone.
But you know what? We don't know yet. Let's just talk about the indictment,
which is a fact, right? Because I have it right here.
It's significant. Also a fact is that it came out last week that the DNC and Hillary Clinton has ties through this Fusion GPS Oppo research group, and they also paid money to get this Russian dossier. Now, I'm not saying I don't
but
like the term
that normal
nothing
to have opposition research.
It's not through the Russian operatives, which
ways,
Hillary Clinton did as well.
It's not that it
came out
to Trump, but I'm saying I always had a problem with the fact that there is a crazy amount of ties.
But this is the ultimate breakdown of democracy and the humor and levity surrounding it on both sides. And by the way, I would like to say that there's a quote that
Let's not talk about both sides.
Can I please finish?
Well, no. Let's not talk about both sides. Let's talk about what's happening today.
Hillary Clinton is not the president,
and Hillary Clinton wasn't just indicted.
Okay, Tim, one thing I'm just going to point out. Hillary Clinton is not the president. Hillary Clinton was not indicted, quote unquote. Well, neither was Donald Trump. He is the president. He wasn't indicted. So there's a fallacious implication in that closing statement right there. I could go on and on, but you're the guest. Lead us through this, and where do you see the bias in the media?
Well, it starts with the idea that you're going to have a panel on a Sunday show that's stacked all to one side, which we're used to, or a panel on The View, which is stacked all to one side, which is a daily occurrence. It's sort of surprising that we've had Meghan McCain, who I would expect to be more like her father, Senator John McCain, and just agreeing with the liberals on everything. She's actually trying to put up a fight here a little bit and say there are other facts. And so the real problem I think that we're facing on these two panels is they somehow think that we can't, in the media and in politics, talk and chew gum at the same time, that we can't have a Trump scandal to discuss and a Clinton scandal to discuss, and that for them to excuse it by saying we only care about the scandals of the guy that got elected, look, there's a reason Hillary Clinton didn't get indicted by Comey or was not recommended to be indicted by Jim Comey. What did he say? He said no prosecutor would indict her. Why? Because she was running for president. So we have this constant standard from our liberal media, which is Hillary is always off limits. She's off limits because she's running for president. Now she's off limits because she lost for president.
We all listen to the liberal media and we wonder why they can excuse their own and excoriate their opponent. They excuse their own for committing the exact same error, committing the exact same sin, the exact same crime, while they excoriate their opponent for the exact same error, the exact same sin, the exact same crime. Do you have any theory as to why they can be so duplicitous and hypocritical in the way they critique the opponent and excuse their friend?
Well, and let's try to be humble and say, the conservative side can certainly have the same tendency to say your scandals matter and the scandals of our people don't matter. So I'm not saying that President Trump, you know, there's nothing you can investigate about him. He's wonderful. He never did anything wrong. But the double standard here is they used the word treason to describe Donald Trump Jr. Meeting with a couple of Russians to get some dirt on Hillary. This is exactly what Hillary's campaign paid for.
Spot on, Tim.
Get dirt on Trump.
I'm going to have to move us on here. Spot on. Double standard. Again, thanks, Tim, for joining us here on Washington Watch this afternoon. We're going to take a break. Remember, after this break, I'll be giving a little bit of a commentary and monologue, and then we'll take calls at 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. We'll be right back after the break.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. Again, I'm the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, as I have said repeatedly on this program, not only today, but at other times when I've guest hosted. I'm proud of my university. I'm proud of the fact that Oklahoma Wesleyan stands boldly and unapologetically for a clear, consistent, and unapologetic mission statement. Our mission is what we call the four P's, the four pillars. The primacy of Jesus Christ, Jesus is the Son of God, the priority of Scripture. Scripture is the Word of God, the pursuit of truth. Truth is given by God, it is not made up by you or me. And then finally, the practice of wisdom. Wisdom, holiness, sanctification, obedience is demanded by God. It is not optional. Those are the four cornerstones. That's the foundation upon which we build our university. And would you think that anybody would be able to come onto my campus and rudely and crudely violate or show disrespect to any of those four things and be exonerated? Do you think I should have the right as a university president to expect the guests that attend my institution, either as a student, a faculty member, or coming here to listen to a guest lectureship, or those athletes that come here to compete against Oklahoma Wesleyan teams? Do you think I have the right to expect everybody to behave accordingly in my house? Should they show respect to my values, to this institution's particular mission statement, to the things that it holds dear? I would argue that surely we all agree that when somebody enters into your house, that you have the right to expect them to behave in a manner that honors your particular values. Well, this past Friday, I received a letter from the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics, the NAIA. It is the organization that represents many of the small private schools across the nation, the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics. We are members of that. Oklahoma Wesleyan is a member of the NAIA. So is the College of the Ozarks. Why is that important? Well, again, I received a letter this past Friday from the NAIA president stating that this organization, the NAIA, had decided to change the location of its 2017-2018 National Championship Basketball Tournament. You see, it's been held at the College of the Ozarks for the last 18 years, and by all accounts, CFO, the College of the Ozarks, has done an exemplary job of being the host of the National Basketball Tournament. But yet, I'm receiving this note saying that, effective immediately, the NAIA has taken that tournament away from the College of the Ozarks, and they're going to put it at some other location yet to be determined, so the letter said. The reason for this last-minute change? What was the reason for it? Well, as stated in the letter, the College of the Ozarks has instituted a new policy. Not only are its own players required to stand at attention for the national anthem, but CFO, College of the Ozarks, expects all visiting teams to do the same. In other words, Dr. Jerry Davis, the president of College of the Ozarks, has said that when you are in his house, you should show respect to his rules and his values. You should be polite. You should have good manners. You should not insult your host, but rather should show him respect. And furthermore, Dr. Davis has made it clear that because his school's mission, his very mission, includes teaching and affirming patriotism and showing corresponding respect to our nation's military and its veterans, that he expects anyone and everyone visiting his campus to simply stand up and honor our country's flag and the sacrifice of limb and life that it represents when our national anthem is played. And if you are so rude as to refuse to do so, then CFO won't play you. Game over. I'll say that again. He expects his own students to stand, his own athletes to stand in his house, and he expects the visitors, the visiting team, its athletes to stand in his house to honor his mission, which includes patriotism and requires the students and the people in his house, in his gymnasium, on his court, to stand and honor our country's flag and the veterans and the sacrifices that that represents. Okay, now let me repeat. Because the College of the Ozarks expects visiting teams to respect its mission and to honor our nation's veterans and its flag, the NAIA has decided to punish CFO and take the national tournament away from them and give it to somebody else. This is shameful. The NAIA is an organization that promotes itself as a champion of character. That's its motto, champions of character. But yet the NAIA doesn't have the depth of character to keep its word and to honor its contract with the College of the Ozarks relevant to this tournament. This is the same organization who just 2 years ago showed it didn't have the clarity of character to defend a female athlete's right in the state of North Carolina to have her own bathroom. And now it doubles down on its banality and shows it doesn't have the strength of character to defend a school's right in Branson, Missouri, to honor our national anthem. The leadership of the NAIA doesn't have the integrity or the character to recognize its own hypocrisy in this situation. In claiming to promote free speech, it turns around and punishes the College of the Ozarks for exercising free speech. In claiming to champion tolerance, it turns around and tells the College of the Ozarks that its patriotism is intolerable. This organization is so intellectually clouded that it doesn't seem to understand that in taking sides with those who disparage our nation's flag, they are defaming the very freedoms this flag represents. They are sawing off the very branch upon which they sit, severing the branch of constitutional liberty from the trunk of personal responsibility and moral clarity will not lead to more freedom, but rather to no freedom. Killing the tree of patriotic duty will end in nothing short of political oppression. This PC agenda is not about personal freedom. It's about political power and control. It's about arrogance and elitism. It's about someone else telling you and me how to live and what to say and what we can do and what we cannot do on our own property and in our own home. This is not freedom. This is ideological fascism. This is elitism at its worst. This is about telling the uppity Jerry Davis that he can't sit where he wants to sit on the bus. And when Dr. Davis speaks up and says, "Excuse me, this is my bus, I'll sit where I want," he's punished and the tournament is taken away from him. I'll say it again. This is simply shameful. When will this nonsense stop? If the NAIA won't honor the patriotic mission of the College of the Ozarks, then why do you think they would honor the biblical mission of Oklahoma Wesleyan University? If a tournament can be taken away from CFO because they expect everyone to stand for the national anthem, then how long do you think it will be before a tournament will be taken away from Oklahoma Wesleyan University because we expect everyone to stand when we open a game with prayer? Jerry Davis doesn't want guests in his house dishonoring our nation's flag. I don't want guests in my house dishonoring our nation's God. How long will the NAIA permit me to be true to Okwu's mission? How long before we are punished for not submitting to this arrogance and politically correct nonsense? How long will I be allowed to require men from visiting teams to stay out of our ladies' restrooms? How long will I be able to refuse to play a visiting women's team that fills its roster with biological men who feel on that given day that they're women? How long will I be allowed to tell visiting coaches and players to stop using the Lord's name in vain in my gym and on my court? How long will I be allowed to require visiting fans to be quiet and show respect when we pray? The NAIA has just shown again that it does not, and is not an organization of character, but rather one of capitulation and cowardice. Taking the tournament away from C of O is shameful. I have many teams, soccer, basketball, and baseball, that are ranked as some of the best in the nation in the NAIA. But today, I am embarrassed to be a member. This is shameful. Again, the call-in number right now is 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234, and I welcome your calls. What do you think about this? Should the NAIA, the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics, be taking a tournament away from Dr. Davis and the College of the Ozarks simply for being true to their mission statement? My mission statement includes four pillars: the primacy of Christ, the priority of Scripture, the pursuit of truth, and the practice of wisdom. If I expect people to show respect, they don't have to believe that. They don't even have to own those particular pillars, those cornerstones to my mission. But common sense and common courtesy would suggest that when you go to someone else's party and you enter into their house, into their living room, into their home territory, onto their property, that you should probably show a little bit of respect to those people when you do. Granted, there may be some traditions within that household that you don't hold dear, but when you go to their Christmas party, to their Thanksgiving party, when you go to their particular house, you're expected to be polite and have good manners. I would hope that you teach your children to do the same. But here we have it. College of the Ozarks simply says our mission statement includes patriotism. It's in our mission statement. Therefore, on our campus, on our property, we expect our own students to stand at attention and show allegiance to the flag and show respect to the national anthem, and thereby implicitly show the same respect to the veterans who have given life and limb to this cause, to this country, to this flag. We expect our own students to do that, and as guests in our house, would you please do the same? And they're going to be punished. The tournament is taken away. Lori Ann in Louisiana, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, first of all, hello. And second of all, they're wrong. But there's nothing I can do about it. There's no power that I have. What I want to know is what you, as the president of the university, can do and are willing to do. Can you withdraw from the organization?
That's a good question. Yes, we can withdraw, and I don't know what Jerry Davis is going to do right now. But I would suggest this, Lorianne, you can do something. You can speak up, you can write, you can talk, you can call the NAIA. You may say, well, I don't have a student that's involved in it, or I don't have a dog in this fight. I would argue you do. It's kind of like when I challenge you all as listeners, even though you don't have kids in college, you should care about what colleges are teaching and what colleges are doing, because what's taught today in the classroom is going to be practiced tomorrow in your community. So even though you don't have a vested interest in college education or college athletics per se, I would argue that every human being in the United States, every citizen, does have a vested interest in intellectual freedom and religious freedom and the right of a private organization to be loyal and true to its own mission statement. So in that sense, I think everybody listening does have a dog in the fight, and I would encourage you to write or call. Call the NAIA. Write the NAIA. Express your concerns. And then support Jerry Davis. Call Jerry Davis up and say, good for you. I'm sure he's getting beat up right now, and he's being criticized by a lot more people than are bothering to call him and saying, this is a good move. Thanks for having character, and thanks for having tenacity, and thanks for having a spine. I appreciate your convictions. Michael in Louisiana, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I'm just wanting to call in and confirm I'm a big believer in my house, my rules, your house, your rules. If you can't have rules in your own house, I mean, you can't have anything. That's just the basis of of the United States. I'm a big libertarian. I believe in accepting responsibility for your own actions and holding people responsible for theirs. So just wanted to get that out. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. Sounds like Michael had a car alarm going off in the background there. That's distracting for Michael. You know, Michael's spot on. My house, my rules. You know, what is endemic to the whole discussion of athletics? Athletics exists because of rules and boundaries. Is that not correct? You can't play football without boundaries. You can't play basketball without a referee and without goals. You can't play soccer if you don't acknowledge the rules of the game. The very endeavor of sports implies structure. It implies reason. It implies order. And it implies that if you can't play within the boundaries, what happens to you? The whistle is blown. You are called for a foul. Sometimes you're even excluded from the game. You're removed from the game because you have violated the rules so egregiously. The NAIA of all organizations should recognize this, that if you don't have rules, you can't play the game. If there is no referee, you're going to have chaos. And if people don't discipline themselves to the boundaries, the rules, if they don't memorize the play, if they don't pay attention to the coach, if they ignore the referee, then chaos ensues. You don't have competition. Rather, you have chaos. And what we have right now is Jerry Davis is trying to establish some rules, some boundaries, if you will, within the given context of his community. And as the result of having those rules and those boundaries within his community, he's being criticized for it to the point where the tournament is being taken away from him. He's run the thing for 18 years in an exemplary fashion. Nobody disputes that. It's a great place to go and have a national tournament. Good for Jerry Davis for spending the time and the money to host it for 18 years. And simply because he wants his students and the visiting team to stand up and show respect to the national anthem and our nation's flag, and thereby show respect to the veterans that his institution honors missionally, i.e. patriotism. It teaches his students patriotism. He's being criticized and punished for it. Does this make any sense? Does this make any sense to those who understand the common sense that comes with being an athlete and disciplining yourself and recognizing the paradox of discipline and freedom, that if you can't discipline yourself to the rules of the game, you never have the freedom to be an athlete? You become an armchair quarterback. You become a critic rather than a participant. Again, the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Let me speak about this a little bit further. Okay, so let's say tomorrow at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, I have a visiting team that has come to my campus repeatedly over the years and shown disrespect in my court. The coach uses the F word all of the time, loudly, so that all the fans can see it. The coach has actually confronted the referees, in some sense of the word, almost violently, getting in their face to the point where the referees have complained to me and said, if you don't file a complaint against this particular coach, we're not coming back. Let's say that that coach has actually had his players restrain him as he's screaming profanity at the referees and others within the gymnasium. Let's say I've actually had to call police into my gymnasium and have them stand by that coach's bench to make sure this doesn't happen again. Should I be penalized for suggesting the next time that team comes to my gymnasium, they should behave? And if they don't behave, we're not playing them? Should I be penalized for that? Should I lose a tournament because of that? Well, everything I just described to you has happened before. It's happened when an opponent, an NAIA opponent, has entered my gymnasium and behaved that way. I've issued appropriate complaints, and I've said, if they come back, we're not playing them, because that is inappropriate behavior and it disrespects our mission, it disrespects our Lord. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. Thank you for joining me this afternoon on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. And remember, keep fighting the good fight, because in the end, you know who wins.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.